Are you going to stand up for what you believe, or are you going to compromise that to win Miss USA?
The president is somebody who prays each and every day, whether it's National Prayer Day or not.
Protect the dignity of every human person, the sanctity of human life from the tiny baby in the womb.
Hold up your Bible. Say it like you mean it. This is my Bible. I am what it says I am. I have what it says I have. I can do what it says I can do. I will never be the same. God bless you.
Thank you for providing theology for clerical collar, white collar, and blue collar.
Well, they're calling for tolerance from the rest of us, aren't they? Gay activists? Why can't they practice it? Why can't they practice it when a 21-year-old contestant in the Miss America contest honestly answers the question in a rather innocuous way, it seems to me, do you think that there should be gay marriage in all 50 states of the United States? She said, well, you know, I don't really mean to offend anybody, but I think marriage should be between a man and a woman. And she prefaced it by saying, we live in a country where people have the choice. So why the big deal among the gay activists and their allies in the media? Why the intolerance for this young woman, Carrie Prejean? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We begin with a short conversation. Colleen Carroll Campbell will talk with us about Miss California and the intolerance of gay rights activists. And then we'll spend the rest of today's program talking about classical Christian worship. Our guest, Pastor Bill Swirla. Our call-in number for the next hour, 1-877-623-6943-877-623-MYIE, and our in-studio email address this Thursday afternoon, April the 30th, talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org. Colleen Carroll Campbell is a St. Louis-based fellow for the Ethics and Public Policy Center. She's author of the book The New Faithful, and she writes a weekly column for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Colleen, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
Was Prejean's answer to the question about gay marriage in all 50 states that controversial?
No, I don't think it was at all. In fact, I think you could argue it was a bit tepid for those of us who have a lot of arguments in our arsenal against same-sex marriage. I would have liked to have seen her get into those, but, you know, it's a beauty pageant, and she was trying to be gracious and as mild as possible on such a loaded question. But she did come out and say that she believes marriage should be between a man and a woman. Not exactly a wild proposition, at least for the last 5,000 years.
If you follow the popular media coverage of the event, you would get the impression that she is completely out of the mainstream in this opinion, that she is backward, and that everyone who holds her views, while they may be a relatively few vocal minority out there, they are on the wrong side of this issue. What do Americans really believe about same-sex marriage?
Well, I've never seen a national opinion poll that did not show that a majority of Americans oppose gay marriage. I mean, that's just been a constant ever since this debate got started. Now, those numbers are shifting, particularly among the young. We do see a fairly high and somewhat alarming degree of support for this among those in their teens and early 20s. But when you look at America as a whole, there's still a strong majority that opposes same-sex marriage. And when you look at voters in the 29 different states now that have approved state constitutional amendments banning gay marriage, including Miss California's home state, it's quite clear that actually there is a silent majority here that agrees with Miss California. But, of course, many Americans no longer speak out about this because this orchestrated campaign to intimidate and silence critics of same-sex marriage has actually been quite effective.
So what did Prejean do that was so wrong in the eyes of the media?
She simply declared that she didn't believe she didn't believe in same-sex marriage. I mean, it's really that simple. She was supposed to give what has now become the politically correct answer, apparently. And no matter how mildly you put it, no matter how many no offenses she threw in there, she still spoke the truth from her heart. And as she saw it, she spoke about a conviction that millions of Americans hold. And if you heard, if you saw the telecast, there was quite a lot of applause when she said that. But by putting this into words, I think what she did was remind Americans that, hey, you're not alone out there if you think there's something wrong with this. And I think there's, you know, this impression that's really been foisted upon us that you are alone and you should feel alone. And in fact, you should feel and be treated like a bigot, like someone akin to a supporter of the KKK, if you actually believe that marriage is between a man and a woman. So in a very short period of time, just a couple of years, even though gay activists have not been able to win at the polls, they have managed to win in the media, which is where so many of their allies are, and in this sort of thought control, speech control environment, which I think is really becoming very frightening.
It is a tyranny that masquerades as tolerance, because the gay activists, of course, are asking for both legislatively in our laws, but also societally in the way we view things as Americans, for complete tolerance and perhaps even more acceptance. Why can't they seem to practice it themselves?
Well, I don't think that a lot of these activists are ever going to be happy, no matter what law is passed, as long as there are people out there, like myself, who say, you know what, I don't think this is right. I don't agree with your lifestyle. There is something, I think, in this debate that goes deeper than semantics and goes deeper than policy. And I think it's a question of what's in the human heart, and there must be some sense that I'm not comfortable with this if I need the entire world to constantly ratify my sexual choices. I mean, if you think that there's nothing wrong with two men marrying each other and calling it marriage and forming families without a woman involved, or vice versa with two lesbians, why is it you need the entire world to stand around you and constantly affirm you? Unless there's something in you that kind of wonders if this is actually a lifestyle choice that is making you happy. So I think there's something deeper here. But, of course, we're never going to hear too much about that as long as the rallying cry is silence to all of those who disagree with us.
What can we expect? We've got there was a big debate, of course, in California. Iowa had judicial fiat. Vermont, the only legislative decision in favor of gay marriage. And then the other states that have already, in some form or another, ratified or approved the practice of gay marriage. What can we expect in states where the gay activists will bring their national campaigns to try and, by judicial fiat or whatever, bring gay marriage to another state? What can we expect from the gay activists there?
Well, I think we can expect to see a lot of what we saw in California last fall. And if you've followed that, that was a pretty frightening thing. Of course, at the beginning of the debate over Proposition 8, which banned gay marriage and won by a 52% of the electorate, which is pretty good in a state that went overwhelmingly for Barack Obama and is traditionally quite liberal. You know, in the beginning, there's attempts at rhetorical persuasion, attempts at winning voters over. But in the waning days of that campaign, things got very ugly. They had the ad, very blatantly anti-Mormon ad, drawing on prejudices against Mormon missionaries, showing them, you know, basically storming into a lesbian couple's home and terrorizing them for fun. And then, of course, in the immediate aftermath of the vote, after voters had their say, everyone had their chance, the anti-Proposition 8 forces were much more well-funded than the pro-Proposition 8 forces. Still, Proposition 8 passed. Everyone had their say. But there was not a sense of accepting this as the voice of democracy. Instead, there was really mayhem in a lot of parts of California. And we saw churchgoers in evangelical, Catholic, and Mormon services being taunted on their way in and out of services. In Palm Springs, we, you know, saw the footage on a local television network of a mob of gay rights activists, most of them men, shoving and harassing an elderly woman, taking a cross out of her hands and stomping on it. In Michigan, a band of gay rights activists who were angry about the California vote stormed into an evangelical church service, yelling at churchgoers, throwing leaflets all over, pulling a fire alarm, unfurling a gay pride flag. I mean, this is the kind of behavior I think we can expect if they don't get their way, and it's not tolerant at all. But I think the whole veneer of tolerance is beginning to wear off, and there's becoming this frustration with the fact that trying to persuade people and trying to get people to vote their way hasn't worked, and so now there's just this sense that, we will accomplish this by any means necessary. And those of us who oppose same-sex marriage, this is not the time for us to go silent. More of us need to stand up and, in our own words, as best we can, explain where we stand on marriage, because we can do that without being offensive. But I think there are many gay rights activists who are intent on taking offense, and I think we need to ignore that and keep moving forward and speak the truth.
Folks, you can read Colleen Carroll Campbell's column in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch titled Attacks on Miss California Reveal Intolerance of Gay Rights Activists under the on-demand page of our website. It's issuesetc.org. Go there tonight. Click on demand. You can read Colleen's column there. Colleen Carroll Campbell is a St. Louis-based fellow for the Ethics and Public Policy Center. She's author of the book The New Faithful, and she writes a weekly column for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Colleen, thank you again.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
When we come back from this break, we're going to spend the rest of this hour of Issues Etc. with Pastor Bill Swirla. We're going to talk about classical Christian worship. What does that mean? I mean, does it just mean the old way we used to worship? Does it mean simply something of historical interest? Well, you know, the Christians have worshiped in a very uniform manner, usually called the historic liturgy, for the better part of 2,000 years. Now, I say for the better part of 2,000 years because in about the last 50 of those 2,000, and really only in about the last 50 of those 2,000, especially in American Christianity, has there been a move to aggressively and intentionally cast off and abandon everything historic and everything classical, time-tested and true, in Christian worship, and opt for kind of making it up as you go along. We'll talk about classical Christian worship with Pastor Bill Swirla after this.